So first of all, I would like to thank the organizer for the meeting and of course for giving me the opportunity to present here some work about renormalization of non-commutative field theory. So we heard already two talks about the subject, and we will go on with two others in the afternoon. We've seen that there was at the beginning a naive attempt to build a non-commutative field theory just by replacing ordinary space by a non-commutative one, and just to try to see what it happens. And what happens is the so-called UVI Hall mixing, which makes the field theory non-renormalizable. Okay, and then came Grosse and Vulkenaar, who made a real breakthrough by just adding a confining potential to the action, which makes the non-commutative five-four model of the Moyal space renormalizable. Okay, so the questions we want to answer are: how general is such a procedure? Can we build other models on different spaces? Okay, so the Grosse Neveu model is an example of another model on the Moyal space, which is renormalizable. Okay. So my talk is actually divided into two parts. The first one has some overlap with Vincent and Reimer's one, but anyway, it is about the 5-4-4 model, and it will allow me to introduce the basic tools of multiscale analysis, and okay, it will allow me to stress the differences with the Grosse Neveu model. Okay. Okay, so just for completeness, I rewrite once more the action. Okay, so X twiddle is given by 2 theta minus 1 x, and theta minus 1 is the metric which enters the definition of the Moyal space. Okay, so everything I'm going to say is about Euclidean spaces. So the real new thing is this new term, and actually the procedure to add a new term to a field theory to make it renormalizable, we call it vulcanization. Okay, so that's all fun there. Okay, so you know,
it works particularly well on tori.
Yes. So here the propagator is no longer given by the heat kernel, but by the Miller one. And you know, it has two decreases in two orthogonal direction. Okay, so Okay, I write it completely. So, this part is the equivalent to the usual one for small t, with respect to the heat kernel. And the new thing is this very slow decreasing exponential. Okay, so there are some things to note on this propagator. First, the mass is completely artificial. In community field theory, the mass stops the flow, and here the presence of the hyperbolic sign has the same role. Okay, so in all the yes.
Isn't there a power gear too?
Yes, you're right. So there is a square because we work in dimension 4. Okay, so we want to use multiscale analysis. This is a very powerful, and I hope I will try to show you that it's also very natural. And this is a tool which follows the ideas of the Wilson renormalization group. Okay, which is let's perform the functional integration in infinitely many steps instead of just one. Okay. So the first step is to slice the propagator to come closer and closer, but very carefully, to this singularity here. Okay. So it's easy. And just rewrite this integral this, which is a very long slice, which is the infrared region, plus a sum from 0 to infinity okay, so then we want to prove the actually here I will show you the power counting of this theory, right? And so we want upper bounds. So the first thing is to know what is the scaling behavior of the propagator, and it's not very difficult to see that any propagator in any slice is bounded by a constant n to the power 2i and some strong decrease in its length. Okay. Vincent showed us why this decreasing part of the propagator is very, very useful to get the renormalizable power counting. But he did it when all the lines of the graph have the same scale. This is so-called monoscale power counting. And for my purposes, I need a multiscale one. So I will show you how it works. Okay, it turns out that it's useful to call this to change the variables and to call this the u and this one v. Okay, so the u variables will be the short ones and the v the long ones. So now in the Lagrangian there is also an interaction part, and because until now the only thing we know is to the only thing we can compute is through expressing this interaction part with the pointwise product. So let's do it. And it is a non-local kernel, which is given by the following expression. So, and here, this means okay, it's a short notation. Okay, so this kernel is made of two parts: a delta function, which is exactly like the momentum conservation in a momentum space, and an oscillation. And there, okay. So we have to take care of both.
But you forgot to write phi of x1.
Oh yes, of course. It's here. Okay. Okay. So as Vincent said, this delta function implies that the vertex is a parallelogram shape. Okay. So, but. For simplicity, I will always draw it either as a losange or a square. Okay, so now let me introduce a key notion which has been mentioned by Reimar, which is the notion of orientability of a graph. Okay, so we'll see that all non-orientable graphs are convergent. Okay, so it's a notion which really discriminates between graphs, and we'll see that it has to do with locality also. So let's consider a graph, and we'll say that it is orientable in a very simple manner. It is orientable if you can draw, if you can equip each line with an arrow, and with the constraint that the arrows have to be alternatively incoming and outgoing around the vertex. Right? Okay, so there is a. So the first example. So I draw the vertex in blue. Okay. There is the non-commutative sunshine graph, and you see that it's not very difficult to see that it's orientable. Okay. So, but there are also non-orientable graphs, of course, and actually they are responsible for the UVIR mixing. So the typical example is the non-planar tadpole. And this one I can't. Okay. Okay, so why is it an interesting notion? Because you see, we have to solve the delta functions. And these arrows represent the signs, the alternating signs in the delta function. Okay. So, as in momentum space, there is an overall conservation concerning the external positions, okay, and we want to know what is it, okay. So if you say that each incoming arrow is a plus sign and each outgoing is a minus sign, then it's not difficult to remark that if you make the sum of all the delta functions of all the graph,
the product.
Yes, I mean the sum of the arguments.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So you imagine you have a graph with n vertices. Okay, you have n delta function. You can replace the system of n delta function by n minus one,
yes,
and replace the last by the sum. Okay.
By the conservation.
And this will be the overall conservation. So you see each line which is orientable goes from a minus to a plus sign, right? And then when you perform the sum, you will get the difference between the two positions, right? And this is the difference, a u variable, which is small. Okay? So what you get is a function which is the sum of our external points, some sign, plus a sum over all orientable lines of the u variables, plus or minus the sum over the non-orientable ones of the long variables. Okay? So, now imagine you have an orientable graph. Then this is not there, okay? And it tells you that the graph is almost local up to small factors, right? So orientability is also closely related to the notion of locality, right? Okay, and then it's very fortunate that in the 5-4 theory, all non-orientable graphs are convergent, because if they were not, we wouldn't have been able to renormalize them. Okay. So, and you see, concerning, for example, the non-planar tadpole, it is non-local, because the typical distance between the external points is very long, right? And this is the point which makes it very dangerous. Not really that it makes diverge all the function of the theory, but really it's not renormalizable by a local contour term. Okay, so let me sketch how to get the multiscale power counting. So first of all, the slicing of each line of the graph implies that every amplitude can be written as a sum over so-called scale attribution, okay, where mu goes, it belongs to I will explain. So I of g is the number of lines, internal lines. Rho is a UV cutoff in the index space, and this means all the natural numbers. Okay. So now we want a bound on each AG mu, right? So first of all, we can try a very crude bound by just bounding by one every oscillation, right? So this is certainly smaller than okay. right? Okay, so you have the vertex functions, and then the propagators for each line, which is actually equipped with an index. Okay, so as in momentum space, this delta function will be used to solve as many positions as three lines. Okay. So we also know that the integration on the u variable gives a very good factor, which is n to the power minus 4 I, and the integration on the v variable gives a very bad factor, which is exactly the inverse. Okay, but the delta function allows us to solve all the long variables of the tree, right? And for the loop lines, these two integrations compensate. Okay, so we are now with something like this is the divergent factor, which is somewhere here at the in front of C, and we have all the tree lines with something like. Okay. So this can be very easily rewritten in the following way. Okay, so maybe some constant to the power n. Okay, so it's not a very difficult step, but there are 2 points. First of all, you see that all the good factors come from the tree. Okay, so we have to optimize the tree to have the best factor we can. Okay, so we choose the tree to have the highest scale, the highest lines it is possible. Okay, and then you see if I write the power counting like this, each line seems to contribute to the power counting only from its given scale down to zero, not before, right? So then it's natural to define the following object. So we will call GI as the set of lines in G such that the index of the line is greater than I. Okay? So generally GI is not a connected subgraph of the total graph, and it has a certain number of connected components. And these connected components are very important for multiscale analysis. Okay, so we see that GI is a kind of union of GIK, and the GIK are the connected components. Then, with this definition, we can see that its HMU is actually bounded by a constant to the power n, a product on all the scale, on all the connected components at this scale, m to the power minus omega of GIK, where omega of GIK is the superficial degree of convergence and is here given by n of GIK minus 4. So n is the number of external legs. Okay, so this result tells us three things. First of all, only the connected component contribute to the power counting, right? So a connected component is a subgraph of the graph G with all internal lines higher than all external ones. Right? Okay. So that means that the subgraphs, which have at least one internal line lower than one external line, is actually not divergent. Right? Okay. So the second thing is that this is a very crude power counting. I should, of course, take care of the oscillations, and one can do, and one can actually prove that omega is n if the connected component is non-orientable, and it is even n plus 4 if gik is non-planar. So this is not an optimum power counting because we do not recover exactly all the topological dependence. But okay, with the parametric representation, one can do it. Okay, and last point concerning this formula, but certainly not the least, the factorization of the power counting into the connected components really reflects the fact that the renormalization group is directed from UV to IR. Okay? That means if you look at if you look a connected component at scale I, you can tell me what is its contribution to the power counting. And it does not depend on all the scales lower, all the lower scales. Okay, so this is roughly how we get the power counting. Okay, and now I would like to switch to the Grosse-Neuve model. Okay, so the Grosse-Neuve model is a quartically interacting fermionic theory in two dimensions. So here we want to write it on the two-dimensional Moyard plane. And the action you've seen this morning is the following. Plus some interaction part I will detail in a minute. Okay, so this additional term is actually a guess. We want to try a kind of equivalent of the 5-4 theorem. Okay, and here what is interesting is that it's completely equivalent to a theory in a constant magnetic background. Okay, so as usual, let's see the propagator. Okay, I will just write already the sliced one because you see the formula this morning. So actually, CI behaves like, okay, like this. Times some decrease. Okay. So.
I'm sorry. T is. There is both
yes. Sorry,
I.
Sorry.
Surprise.
You're right. Right? Okay. So you see, x minus y is of order m minus I. So the dominant term is this one and this one. Okay? So, and we saw this morning that the decreasing function in V here is replaced by this oscillation. Okay? Well, so what about the interaction part? It's not enough. You see if I'm right here. Okay, so in the commutative theory, due to the locality of the interaction, actually there is only one interaction possible, which is side up, side down. And you can rewrite it any way you want. Or something like this. Okay, up to maybe a factor. This is exactly the same interaction. Okay, so here the kernel is non-local, and then we have different possibilities, at least six. So there is a part which is the orientable interactions, which is given by okay, and the non-orientable one is the same, but just make the following change. You just exchange the first psi bar with the first psi. Okay, so this is something like this. Plus, you see the same change here. Okay, so why do I call them orientable and non-orientable? So this is because you see psi bar and psi alternate around the vertex in this interaction part, and like the plus and minus signs of the delta function. And you see by weak contraction you can only link a psi to a psi bar. So every graph made with such interaction is orientable. Okay. On the contrary, every non-orientable graph is made with such interaction. Right? Okay. So we want to know what becomes the decreasing function in V. And we saw that they were very important to get the renormalizable power counting. So we should find where they are. So actually, they're not present in the initial data, but after integration on the u variable, they appear. So let me give you some very simple examples. So you have a situation like this, and clearly this is a Gaussian integration, and this is given by... Okay, so, and now we have it, right? But the problem is that for a general graph, we don't really want, and actually we don't really know how to compute the exact integration over all the u variables. Okay, so we have to find some solution to this problem with by using carefully the oscillations. Okay, so there is a way to do that. Just by okay, let me show you. So we introduce a positive sufficiently fast decreasing and regular function, for example Schwarz class, by doing this. Okay, and we are going to put it in the simple example I show. So we have something like this now. Okay, and now we have to make appear some couplings between the a variable and the u1, because actually this function is in some sense mimics the decreasing function, the decreasing here. Okay, so we just perform this change of variable, and then we just apply integration by parts. So, I mean, this is okay, and this you can do it at any power you want. So by integrating by parts, you differentiate this function, so it gives a factor m to the I and xi prime, and here it can differentiate the exponential, and it also gives a factor of order m to the I. So then what you get is okay, let me write it this A. So this is bounded by capital Xi is some linear combination of Xi and its derivatives, and okay, and then you have a polynomial decrease, which is as good as an exponential one. Okay, so this method seems to be very easy way to get the missing decreasing functions. Okay, I should mention that this is a very, very simple example, and But when you have a general graph, you have very lots of oscillations, and you have to take care of all of them. And actually, you get not really a decreasing function in V, but in a linear combination of lots of V variables. And then the difficult task is to prove that all these decreasing functions are really independent, right? And this can be proved by rewriting all the oscillations in terms of the U and B variables, which is a work initiated by Filk, and which we generalize to the case of non-translation invariant propagator, and also by performing some little more subtle change of variables. And the fact that the title is a renormalization of the orientable gross number model is just because technically we are not yet able to prove the independence of this decreasing function in the case of the non-orientable interactions. Okay, so that's why we are restricted to orientable ones. Okay, so let me now show you some differences with the 5-4 model. So concerning the power counting of the theory, there is at least one surprise. So as soon as you have the decreasing function for V, you can bound the remaining oscillation by 1 if you want a crude bound, and you get the n minus 4 degree of convergence. We can also prove, as in the 5-4 case, that all the non-planar graphs are convergent as n plus 4. But there is some new feature concerning the graphs with more than one broken faces. Or broken face. So in the 5-4 theory, the power counting was n minus 4 plus 8g plus 4b minus 1, which means that each time b is greater than 2, the power counting is convergent. Okay, so we want to recover such a result for the gross novel model, but you know, these graphs are typically not of the form of the initial Lagrangian. I mean, the divergent part. So that's why we want them to be to be convergent. So let me take a very typical example. So here we have two lines at scale I, and in the middle we have some insertion. Okay, and I call I the insertion in the middle. Okay, so we also assume that all the scales inside the insertion are lower than I. Okay, so that's why at scale I we have a graph which is this one, which has n equal 4, b equal 2. Okay, and we would like to see if it is convergent or not. And the result is that the answer depends on what is between these two points, x prime and y prime. That means the power counting of this connected component at scale I depends on what happens at lower scale. Okay. And actually, this is because, contrary to the 5-4 case, the decreasing function in V are closely related to the scaling decrease of the U variables. Okay? So, actually, in the 5-4 case, how it works? We have we can prove that in this case we have an oscillation, so let me call this line 1, an oscillation of the form V1 wedge x prime minus y prime. Okay, this can be used to get a decreasing function which tells you that x prime minus y prime is actually smaller than n to the minus I. Right? So now, imagine you have here a line of scale j with j smaller than I. The propagator tells you that actually this length is of order n to the minus j. Right? So the broken face actually shortens the length of the line inside. Okay? So the gain is m to the power minus I minus j, which makes the graph convergent. Right. So why it does not work in the Gross-Neve model? Just because if you use this oscillation to shorten the line here, then the decreasing function you get for the corresponding long variables is actually of order m to the power I and not to the power j. So that's why you cannot improve the power counting of such components. Okay? So actually one can be very more precise, and one can prove that the power counting is improved in all situations except when there is only one line, okay, at the lowest gain. So this means that the only critical situation is when you have a connected component with 4 external points, 2 broken faces, and which is at a lower scale a 2-point function made of just one additional lower line. Okay? So this does not sound very well, because you see we have some situation where you have a graph which is divergent, but is absolutely whose divergent part does not look like the Moyle vertex. And once more, there is some kind of I don't know, miracle. It's maybe too strong, but we are lucky, because we can escape the problem just by the following remark. So we have a divergent graph, so of course we have to do something to make it convergent. Okay, but we cannot renormalize it directly. Okay. So in the 5-4 in any theory, you start from the UV cutoff and you go down with the scales, and each time you meet a divergent connected component, then you renormalize it. Okay? Here you can't do this. So actually you have to wait that this lower line appear. Okay? And then you renormalize the 2-point function. Okay? So usually when you do this, maybe you can do this in a commutative theory. For example, renormalize a 2-point function with a 4-point subgraph, but it generally not renormalize the 4-point subgraph, because what you what it means that it renormalized the subdivergent, it means that you perform a Taylor expansion around the local part of the graph, and then the remainder term are actually of order m minus I instead of m minus j. Okay, and then you can perform the sum over the scale attribution, which is the equivalent of the cutoff go to infinity. Okay, so, and the point is that here, this is the case. I mean, the remainder terms are really smaller than expected, because this line is actually shorter than the propagator says. Okay? Just because the oscillation of the broken face. Right? And so this makes the non-commutative Gross number model renormalizable to all orders. Okay. So there are some more things to say. First of all, the power counting can be proved for all omega between 0 and 1. So, a few comments. Here, I can't include 1 because I have some cancellation of oscillation, which makes the problem more difficult. And actually, we will later hear a talk which will show you that in some cases, when omega is equal to 1, you have some solvable structure in the theory. And I get that the perturbative method is a bit too rough to see this structure. Okay? And but also, the point is that everything is right at omega equals 0. So actually, I'm not really obliged to put it. Okay? So there is something else. If you consider the massive model, okay, it means you have a bare mass which is non-zero. Okay, then if you impose that you want that the four-point subdivergence of this graph is renormalized by the renormalization of the two-point corresponding function, then you have to include an additional counterterm in the Lagrangian, which is this one. And this is only true for m and omega different from 0. If you put m bare equals 0, then it stays 0 at all orders, as in the commutative case. Okay, and this disappears. Okay, so let me make some let me make some conclusion. So actually, since the breakthrough of Grosso and Vulcanar, several non-commutative field theory have been shown to be perturbatively renormalizable. Actually, only 544 and the gross number model are just renormalizable and studied at any, almost any value of the omega parameter. Okay, the 544 have the advantage to be quadratically divergent, and for parity reasons, the gross number model is only logarithmically divergent. Okay, anyway. Okay, so what I think I should do in a short term work is the computation of the beta function, of course, because we would like to know if we see a similar picture, a similar feature that in the 544. Actually, I don't think we will see, because
what is the classical situation for the beta function? I mean, in the far omega equals 0?
It is asymptotically free in the ultraviolet. And as Vincent explained this morning, in 544, what makes the flow bounded is the coupling between the omega and lambda flow, right? And this is due to the fact that the tadpole is non-local. Then it renormalizes already at one loop the omega term. Here, the tadpoles are local. then we don't have this coupling. Okay? So, I have also a conjecture, but because I prove that all these interactions are stable under the RG flow. Okay? I mean any linear combination of these three. But I think that this one alone is stable. Okay, so I've tried several graphs and it works, but I have no proof at all orders. And we have to understand what happens with the non-orientable graphs, right? Because for them, the omega term will certainly be useful. Okay, so we can also remark that orientable interactions are some kind of an alternative to vulcanization. Okay, but the point now, the problem is to decide why to choose such interaction with in place of marginal one. Yes.
Isn't it that the orientable ones are allow gauge invariance, namely if you change gauge here?
No, it's like psi bar psi square.
Because this is a model which you can interpret in the magnetic field,
yes.
And then it is really translation invariance on a magnetic.
You're completely right. Completely right. But you know, it's not anymore a theory under magnetic field if I put omega equals zero, and it's not very. You see, if I only consider orientable interactions, then I'm not obliged to put an omega term. It's renormalizable without. So, I don't know. Okay? Okay, of course, we should try to construct very rigorously to study non-perturbatively this model. This would be a very good toy model to develop a constructive theory on non-commutative spaces. And I think the main interesting point it is that in this theory we have some graphs whose power counting depends on the scale which are lower than the typical scale of the graph. This means that the power counting do not factorize anymore into the contribution of the connected components. Okay, and I think this is why there is no clear way to define a direction from UV to infrared on Moyal space.
I am not sure.
Yes.
Can I make a comment?
Of course.
But there's also this other idea, I don't know if you have followed it, that I would say the connected components are just defined now by the exterior.
Yes.
Because in this example, you see that if you see, when you have planar graphs like that, you have a definition of the exterior, and the exterior is above the exterior.
Yes, you're completely right. So what Vincent is saying is that actually in the matrix basis, the Taylor expansion is only performed on the propagators on the external face. So here, if it could be true also in X space, then the Taylor expansion would only involve exterior propagator and really renormalize this graph. Okay, so but anyway, you know, we tried in X space and we never see such a phenomena. The I don't know if Reimer has some explanation of why it happens in the matrix mass. I mean, a kind of physical interpretation or something like this. Okay, so I don't know whether we have to look for such an answer. Is it not just true in the matrix basis?
I mean, rather than invert the direction of the renormalization group flow, I would first look if I cannot change the definition of connected components.
Yes.
And just to look at the external shells as defining.
Yes, but I'm not. Right. Okay. Anyways, maybe you're right. Maybe I don't know. And okay, so I stop here.